recorded live.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Monday night conference call. Tonight we're going to look just briefly at the response from the state to our gun lawsuit, and also we're going to talk a little bit about trying to work out organizing the state, which is a necessity if we're going to try to win our republic back. It's going to be a necessity. But anyway, anybody that's on the computer can go out to newyorkcommittemen.org. That's newyorkcommittemen, M-E-N, .org, C-O-M-M-I-T-T-E-E-M-E-N. And if you click on lawsuits, you'll come to a lawsuit page and choose the Second Amendment. And on that page, you'll see that we've updated it with an answer that was dated for April 5th, 2013. Now, we just received that today, so we made it into a PDF and we posted it. You can read their response. We're not surprised by their response. The state's response is always the same. They're above the law. They're above everyone. They're above the law. They tell you what to do. You listen and obey, and they always challenge you, telling you that you don't have authority and or you don't have a cause of action. It's the same thing over and over and over again because they don't want to answer. But they did do some answering. I was kind of surprised on some of their stuff. I mean, their preliminary statement, for instance, let me just read a paragraph off of their preliminary statement. It says, seemingly in response to January 15, 2013 enactment of the Secure Ammunition and Firearms Enforcement Act, herein after the SAFE Act, Chapter 1 of the laws of 2013, a comprehensive package of reforms to New York's existing gun regulatory structure. And it goes on to say plaintiffs being bring this action at law, challenging the government's ability to legislate generally and to legislate firearms specifically. Well, they did understand what our point is. But what I find very interesting is this regulatory structure, the existing gun regulatory structure. So, you know, when you look into the legal appreciation of that word regulatory, it identifies definitely and focuses in on ultimately infringing. It's a control. And so right off the bat, they kind of stuck their foot in their mouth as far as I'm concerned. But they go on to a lot of things, and they try to talk about precedences and safety and how they have to do silly things in order to protect us. And we know, of course, all that's a lie. They just want to disarm us. And everybody knows, and every report or every study that's ever been done, the findings ultimately always are that an armed people, you're safer with an armed people. There are places where arms are carried more often, there's far less crime, especially violent crimes. So, as a matter of fact, there has not been one study yet done that supports the idea of a safer area or a place or a state or anything with any kind of a gun control. All right, I did read through this. There's quite a bit in here that we have to go through and respond to. One of the biggest things, and I didn't notice that they did not respond at all to anything concerning the Continental Congress and the order by the Continental Congress to the government, particularly directly to the governor himself and to the Senate, to the New York Senate, and to the New York Legislative Assembly. Directly telling them to get rid of all gun laws in the state of New York because they're unconstitutional. That's the will of the people. They were elected by the people to solve problems. One of the problems is the Second Amendment problem. They made clear the meaning of the Second Amendment. People have been doing that for a long time, but the government just ignores. But now the Continental Congress has spoke, but they have totally neglected responding to anything that the Continental Congress said. And we did an 8-page addition, an addendum to our original action at law for adding in what the Continental Congress had to say concerning the Second Amendment. I think next week we'll get into more detail once we start to really examine these papers a little closer and try to hone in on the argument and where we want to make our argument. Pretty much every argument they have here falls short of the facts that we have unalienable rights and a right to protect ourselves. I know I wanted to give my daughter, who's 16 years old, a little can of mace so that when she goes out, you know, if anybody bothers her, she can protect herself. But that's against the law. Total insanity. We're not permitted to defend ourselves. So that's all I have to say about the court case right now. It's available to be read, and it's going to need some analysis before I comment any deeper. And again, we need to discuss exactly where we want to really draw the line and make our arguments concerning what they had to say. The other thing tonight we want to just look into, talk about, is organizing. We've been traveling in the state for quite a few years now and teaching the committee man process, and now we're starting to travel the state to teach people about the judicial process. And so what we need to do is organize the state. If we're not organized, there's no way we could save the republic. You know, all of the liberty groups in every county, they're working, doing all kinds of different things, trying to make a difference, trying to make a change, trying to take power. But pretty much most of what they're doing, it might be effective in different ways, but they're not doing anything that actually takes or gives them power. And without power, we can never take back this government. They're hell-bent on telling us that we're a democracy and not a republic, and they treat us as if we're a democracy, and they claim that the numbers are for them, what they have to say about things, and not for what the people really believe or think. But in any event, we are not a democracy. We are a republic. And there's only two processes of power in this country, and the enemy knew this a long time ago, and they worked for quite some time until they finally captured it. They captured the powers of this country by capturing control of the political process and capturing control of our judicial process. We need to take back the political process. We need to take back the judicial process. Now, people may not really understand what that means, to take back the political process. We're not talking about getting involved in politics and party bickering or any of that stuff. That divides people. That's not what we're talking about. We're focused in on taking back the process itself, the control of our government. Each election district elects an elector, one individual. In New York State, there are 16,300 election districts. But each party gets to elect a elector for each one of those 16,300 election districts. And those people who are divided within each county, for instance, my county has 249 committeemen or electors. You know, I know the county of Greene and Columbia, they have something like 50 or 60. Sullivan County, I think, is one of the lowest, 56 or something. If you go into Orange County, New York, I think they have 300 and some odd people. But the point is that there's not all that many people involved in each county that get to really control. And so we need to take back this process. Each county is controlled by a county chairman, which lives and walks and breathes like God, whatever that county chairman says happens politically in that county. And he, of course, gets his orders from the state chairman, who ultimately runs the entire state of New York in whatever party they're in. And the only two parties with power, truth be known, is Republican and Democratic parties. They both have commissioners in the New York State Board of Election. They control those commissioners. Those commissioners are very political. And they control everything that happens for anybody coming into that party. And if you're disobedient to that party, they simply just throw you out. And I'm talking about even people who think that they're elected committeemen. Of course, one of the points we make on our website and that we teach is the fact that the elected committeeman has been expunged quite some time ago. We know at least as far back as 1949 and 48, because that's when the first case law or court cases emerged into the appeals process here in New York State. And the battle began, and the Supreme Court has ruled on numerous occasions that these people don't even have a right to being there. Nevertheless, they run our entire process. And, of course, what we're looking to do is resurrect the elected committeemen. We're trying to do that in two different ways. One, we're trying to do it in the courts through winning a court order to command the state to obey the law and permit for the election of committeemen again, because it's still in our election law. And the other way is really trying to convince people that they need to come into the system no matter what, and maybe we could take it by sheer force, by numerous people. We estimate, well, we know for a fact that each county is controlled by four people, usually generally one, but he usually works with three other people, and they're called the executive committee in every county. And they literally are appointed from and anointed from the state level. And again, the details of that, we do go out and give presentations on how this whole thing works and how they took over the state and what we could do to take it back. So anybody anywhere in the state, if they want to organize for us to come out to give a presentation, we'll come out anywhere. We're heading out, as a matter of fact, on the 20th to Chautauqua, which is a western county, far western, southwestern county. And it's probably the longest distance from us. It's about 6 hours. And we're heading out there on the Saturday, the 20th at 11 a.m. We did post this up on our calendar page. So anybody over in that neighborhood that wants to stop in for that that presentation, it's going to be about three. Well, we got the room booked for about 3 hours. The presentation, probably about an hour and 15 minutes, and then most of the rest is a discussion, questions and answers, and hopefully we'll be leaving with organizing that area. But we'll come out anywhere. Anybody wants to organize their county and hopefully a couple of counties around them for that process. So we're going to be doing that next Saturday. But organizing the state, this is the key thing. We need to get a minimum of four people per county. I think 12 people is ideal. If we can get 12 people in a county, that'd be great. But at least four people who are really focused in on structuring their state, structuring their county, organizing their county, and really keeping people involved. And these people, we need people who are interested in studying the judicial process. We need to take back our judicial process, and it's not as difficult as we've been led to believe. There is a pretty logical, simple process to get into the courts. The big battle is trying to lift up the common law side of the court because lawyers who are trained by the Bar Association, which is a foreign corporation, it's the American Bar Association, but it's really controlled by a foreign authority. And they've controlled the education of our lawyers. They've trained lawyers to believe that statutes are laws. They've trained the people to believe that statutes are laws. Convinced you that you're good law-abiding citizens when they really mean good statute-abiding citizens. And that's how they encroached upon our freedoms, is by robbing us of our right to decide our own behavior, because that's all that statutes do. Statutes just control your behavior. And that's not up for them to do. That's for us to do. There's no way anybody who logically looks at this position from fresh eyes can realize that there's no logical way that legislators could legislate our behavior. After all, we the people ordained and established this Constitution, being the U.S. Constitution, for the United States of America. And then we gave the powers to the legislators and so on and so forth, and we defined them. And nowhere in our Constitution will you find that we have defined the legislating of our behavior has been given to them. That would be silly to do. We've given them the ability to legislate certain things, but definitely not our behavior. The purpose of statutes really is for municipalities, for elected individuals, elected people, bureaucrats. That's what statutes are for. It's to control them and to control some commercial process between the states. And the states have a certain amount of authority to control the commercial process within their states, within reason. Until that process infringes on someone's right, until that happens, then they can do that. So, again, that's a very minimum amount of legislation that they could really do. But they really have been working at this now for 100 years, legislating. Matter of fact, we happen to know that in 1911, that they doubled up the laws of New York State, and the doubling of that law ultimately was all laws, or shall I say, statutes on behavior. And over the course of time, 30, 40 years, they started to execute or exercise that, those legislation, statutes to control the people's behavior, and people have come to believe that it's law when it is not. So anyway, this is the kind of education we the people need to have. We need to understand what liberty really is and responsibilities. And we need to organize our counties. We have 62 counties in the state of New York. We need to develop at least 4 to 12 people in every county. And the people of every county need to rule themselves and talk things out and figure things out. We've got a lot of information and a lot of historical items papers that really get involved in what liberty really is. And this is what people have got to understand so that they can now control their government. So by going through this process and taking control of the political process in every county across the state, we would then control all elected officials under the threat of recall or under the threat of not walking their papers the next election, not supporting them. Whenever the parties hammer down on these politicians roll over and obey every time, with very rare exceptions. You know, certain people like Ron Paul or someone like that, they can get away with it because they have they're so popular in their election districts that they're able to not need the party in order to get elected. But that's rare. Generally speaking, most politicians obey their parties. And what a lot of people don't know, I know people who visit this room know, but generally speaking, is that this the counting of the vote by machines, which is a sin. I mean, it's very dangerous. But in any event, this was approved and set forth by the committeemen, the consenters of the people. They're the ones who decided. And actually, again, it's only a handful of people, party bosses, that made this decision. And so when we complain about all the problems with the electronic voting machines and getting rid of them, the party's awfully quiet about that because they're the ones responsible for it. And people just don't know. There's so much that people don't realize what their parties are really responsible for. And if you're a Democrat and you hate Republicans because you see all the evil things, well, the same thing is true on the other side. If you're a Republican and you don't like the Democrats because of all the evil things you see that their party's doing, both parties are doing the same thing. We're just blind to our own side until we wake up and come to realize they're both the problem. The Republicans have brought us just as deep a mess as the Democrats have. And they just move the process back and forth to the criminals on the right, and then they move it over to the criminals on the left because they do nothing constantly but violate our constitutional rights. So anyway, organizing is the key. That's what I'd like to really try to focus in on tonight is discussion that organizing. If you go out to newyorkcommittymen.org and down towards, I think it's the second from the bottom. Let me see, mission statement. Yeah, second from the bottom. It says county contacts. We have some people who have stepped up to become a contact for the county, to take on the job of organizing their county. And again, the goal is to get a minimum of 4 people really involved, and hopefully 12, and of course if you get more, that's fine too. Generally speaking, you know, of course we want to get all of the Tea Party people, the Liberty groups, whatever groups are out there, involved so that they become committeemen. And they may not be as involved as the 4 to 12 involved, where they really have to get involved with studying to see what's going on and what the process is and what's involved in these processes so that they can teach others to have that power. But this is the way we're going to take back our country. We have to take it back by taking power. We have to take political power. We have to take judicial power. We have to organize in every county, and we have to execute it. We have to communicate, have a form of communications between all the counties and what's going on, where we're going to go next. I mean, once you get involved in the committeeman process, you have the state committee. And the state committee is made up of the 62 county chairmen. Okay, so the 62 county chairmen who are discussing the problems with their counties come up on a state level, and then we, as a group, 62 county chairmen, we elect one state chairman, which is really just the guy to keep order in the room, nothing more. There's no more power in his vote. Well, he shouldn't anyway. But anyway, that brings us to a place where we could really discuss the problems and really find solutions and make major changes and discover on who it is that we need to recall. We're doing something really radical because we've organized with Democrats and Republicans, and we're going to meet Democrats and Republicans together in order to take back this country, bring it back into a republic. And it starts in your town and your county and then our state. And if we could take control of our state, we can then move to take control of the country, because many other states will see what we're doing and emulate us. But if we only work in only one county here or one county there, you're one or two counties against another 60 counties, we're never going to win. We have to take all 62 counties back, or as many as we can, in order to have control of the process. So anyway, that's what we really want to focus in on, organizing, communicating, and being consistent about what we do. And we do have two websites out there. We have newyorkcommitteeman.org, which is educational. And up on the top, you can click on a button that says join, and that brings you to Meetup, New York Committeeman. And you can join that Meetup group, and you'll get some letters. We're able to have some conversations. You'll get some information that we'll give through that particular Meetup group. Hopefully we'll start to meet on a state level from time to time, physically speaking. We have had, back in 2012, we had a convention, a committeeman convention of the 150. At that time, there was 150 elected committeemen in the entire state of New York, Democrats and Republicans together. And we did have a convention back in, I think it was June 6th or 12th or something like that. Anyway, we had a convention, and we created new party rules, Republican and Democratic party rules look the same. We worked them out and hammered them out the same. We did a resolution. And we just, formed together in order to prepare for that time when we will take that power. Because right now they don't recognize us with that power. We did get sworn in. We all have to run again this year, 2013, for those who are interested, and as elected committeemen. And then when we can take the process back, we'll have numbers of people involved and in position. All right, with that, let me open up the phones. Let me unmute everybody. Okay, everybody's unmuted. Anybody with a question or a comment? Mics are open. Phone's open.
John, Tony. John?
Yes.
Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Tony?
Okay,
hey.
Quick question. The Board of Elections and the commissioner of the Board of Elections in each county, how are they paid?
They're paid by the state.
All right.
It's a good question. The check, I'm sure, comes through the county. It's a county paycheck, I'm sure, because it's a county position. But ultimately, it's the state.
Well, the reason I'm asking a question is that the Republican and Democratic parties are two private parties.
Correct.
The state constitution says that you can't expend public funds for a private purpose. I think we might have a case there.
You can't what?
You cannot expend public funds for a private purpose.
That's
both
true.
Parties are private organizations.
That's true. What you have here is this. The commission is that point of connection between the private party, which is supposed to be elected. It's an elected position, an elected group of people who are unpaid. All committeemen are not, no committeemen are paid. They're supposed to be paid. But that commissioner is that connection to the government in order to facilitate the election. In other words, to maintain the record, the books, Republicans and Democrats, to bring out the polling, you know, the machines for voting and setting up the polling places, and also hiring the individuals in order to run that whole apparatus, that whole process. The government is to pay for all that, but the facilitation of that is worked out between the commissioner and the party. The party is supposed to be in control of the primary election almost completely, and then there's more of a state control on the election, but it's not controlled by the on the actual election itself. It's more of a state control, but it's not really controlled by the state, because people are actually hired to man the machines, count the votes, and so on and so forth. But during that whole process, the committeemen are supposed to be there in order to observe the vote, to observe the counting of the vote, to observe the process, to make sure everything is done up and up. And that has been totally eliminated. We don't do that.
But that's the truly elected committeemen, which there are none in New York State.
Correct. Well, there are. There's quite a few of us. There's about 150 of us, but they don't recognize us. Let me ask, we've got some noise coming through phone lines. People, you can mute your phone lines by pressing *6. So if everyone that's on the phone presses *6, you'll be muted. And if you want to talk, you press *6 again, and you'll be able to talk. Anyway.
Hey, John, this is Randy Murphy here.
How you doing, Randy?
I'm new to the group, and I don't know the protocol here, but one of the things that attracted me to your organization was the judicial process and the common law notion. And in the discussion that you've just, in your little soliloquy here, you pretty much talked about democratic process and seizing power and, you know, taking the power away from the powers that be. And it seems like this eternal struggle that is so difficult to execute. And one of the things that really provided a lot of enlightenment for me with respect to the common law is the ability to express our sovereignty over the states and the federal government, and actually by becoming a plaintiff, seize control of the courts. And I'm wondering that if in this Second Amendment and other issues that affect our freedoms in this country, if we were not to focus more on individuals going into the courts and taking over the courts, expressing their sovereignty, and basically having our rights as creations of God recognized in the courts, that would eliminate the jurisdiction of the federal and the state governments over, for instance, germane to this discussion, our right to bear arms and defend ourselves. So if enough people challenged the jurisdiction of the federal and state governments in the courts and won on based on common law and our individual sovereignty over the states and over the federal government, would not that be much easier to express our individual freedoms than trying to, against all odds, sway Republicans and Democrats and beat the system that they've created that's almost unbeatable? You know, can't we, wouldn't it be better really to express our sovereignty and our individual rights individually in the court system, win case after case after case, and develop momentum that way? And that way we would educate the people on our sovereign individualism and our sovereignty over the states and the federal government.
All right, well, let me try to respond to that. You had quite a bit there to say, and let me see if I can't cover it. First of all, I started muting people. I'm going to continue to mute people by just clicking on their name. You should be able to unmute yourself if you want to talk by clicking on *6. That'll mute you or unmute you. I'm doing that so that we have a better connection, because we do get some background noise, and the connection, I guess, doesn't seem as well when you have so many people that are not muted. So again, if anybody wants to talk, you can just click on star 6 to unmute yourself. And you can also click on star 8. That'll raise your hand, by the way, in the room, and we'll see that you're looking to talk, and we'll help you unmute yourself if you can't. So I see someone from New York already raised their hand. I'm going to unmute them right now. But let me try to respond to the idea of what we're just talking about. We are working through the courts, I believe that we can win this process back through a court cases. What it's going to take, it's going to take some extraordinary situations to really come together at the same time. We've discovered in the courts that the trial court level, they're like bottom feeders. They don't even know what law is. And I say that sadly, not to attack, but maybe a little bit to attack, but really sadly, it's really that bad. These people do not understand law. What they understand is statutes. They've been taught statutes in school. They've been taught statutes are law. People believe statutes are law, and that's why they go to, and you'll find out, you know, if you want to know if it's law or not, just ask yourself what court are you in? Because generally speaking, most courts you'll find yourself in is city courts or town courts or village courts. All those courts are what's called the nisi prius court, which means it's a statutory court created by statute, rules by statute. They're not a constitutional court. They're not ruled by the Constitution, and they don't even pay attention or adhere to the existence of the Constitution. So, but we have the same problem in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has the civil law side, and it has the common law side, and they've been taught in law school that statutes are law, and that's what they argue. They try to make that point in the paper that they sent us, that we received today from the gun lawsuit. They make that point that we seem to be above the law or claiming to be above the law. Well, that idea it seems to be in this paperwork. And we are. We're above the statutes. We're not above the law. No one's above the law. But we're above the statutes. Statutes are to control our behavior. We don't want any part of statutes. And that's what people need to understand. If everybody in America understood that statutes are not law and you don't have to obey them and you could just deny jurisdiction in town courts and they can't do anything without your consent, it's an uphill battle right now, but they have to release you. It's just how long it takes to make that point before they finally do release you. So it is an uphill battle. But if everybody understood that and started challenging these people in these courts would shut down. Because they're money makers is all they are. They're just sucking money off the people. And so the whole process, we're trying to go through the law, through the courts, and we're trying to set up the common law principles in the court, and it's going to take a little bit of an argument. We've been through this numerous times now in the Supreme Court, and we've been through a lot of the town courts. We've been in family court. And we're kind of getting the gist of how things are working and how these people think. So we have formed some strategies, and we're going to try something a little new with the gun battle here. We're going to really try to grab control of the court right from the beginning and really hit this head on, the fact that this is a common law court. This is not a court that's running through civil law. This is common law.
John, now, it seems like you're working through nisi prius court systems all the time, and you haven't been able to wrestle jurisdiction in your favor. And when you say we are subject to the law, it's my understanding in common law that as a sovereign individual in my own court, I make my own laws. So right. I am not subject to any law, okay? Right. The only law I am subject to is the common law, where, you know, my rights and my law exist to the end of someone else's nose. And as long as there are no damages to any individual, I can exercise any law I would like. And have we been able to achieve that kind of jurisdictional power within the courts and to convert the courts to a court of record in our favor? Or do we continue to run up against a brick wall because of the the negligence and the you know, the lack of awareness by the magistrates or the judges in the Nisi Prius courts.
Right. Well, here's the problem is they are so far removed from what justice really is. They don't even know what the definition of justice is. They don't know what the definition of a court is. If you were to ask them, I don't know what they would say, but they surely don't understand those two principles. If they did, then we'd have justice in our courts and it'd be run by the people. Now, a court of record, which is what you were talking about, we've established all our cases under courts of record, and we've been following the principles of Thornton, and we kind of came to a point, and we understand why Thornton says be quiet in the court, don't say much, just do a lot of objecting, and then respond back with paper. And he's absolutely correct. But once you get to a certain point where I think we're at that point where we can start debating in the court and making certain points and be very careful not to lose our footing in our jurisdiction, we can then try to take over the court from the front end instead of the back end. Because what he does is he waits till he gets to the back end, to the finale of the court, and that's when it really hits. And usually he doesn't get control, and he's going to now depend on the appellate system to win in the appellate system. And that's what we've been doing, and we're going to continue to figure we're going to win in appellate systems, whether it be in the appellate or the Court of Appeals. We have two other levels of courts above the trial courts, for those who don't know. But our argument in the trial court in the very beginning is going to set the stage and the law. We're going to focus in on the judge, and we're going to want to make sure that the judge understands his role in this particular case and that we are under common law and what that exactly means. And we're going to school him or try to school him, if we can gain that control in the courts. We're going to try to school him to make him to understand. We've given him the law of the case, which is about 18 pages. Thornton wrote up about a 16-page thing. We've added a couple of pages. We've changed it and made New York laws instead of, because he's in California. And we've added some other stuff to it, but so we've enhanced it. But we've given him the law of the case, and we're going to school him on that. We're going to ask him, have you read the law of the case? Well, if you haven't read the law of the case, how can we even proceed with this conference today? Because the purpose of the conference is for all of us to understand our roles and the process of this court, which is a court of record under common law. Now, we do know that common law, that it's sort of alien to the trial courts, and we'll make that point, that it's been a long time since these courts, maybe long before your memory, maybe not, but since these courts have seen a common law procedure. And so we want to make it clear, because it is something that is a jurisdiction, it's what this country was founded on, and it's what this country requires by U.S. Constitution, that all courts be a court of record. And so therefore we're going to push that principle.
Have you sued a judge for contempt yet?
We find him a silver dollar.
We find him a silver dollar, and I think we get him twice. Didn't we get him on a $10, or were we planning to do the $10?
He threatened to hold us under contempt.
Right. Then we went up into the appellate court.
These guys are jackasses. Let me tell you something. Everything John said is true, but you see, they say that we think we're above the law, but all the words in our case are the proclamation of the higher court. We didn't make those words up. These are the cases we have in there, the Supreme Court rulings that says that statutes are not law. They're not reading the case. They're so stupid. In other words, they're going to lose when it gets up to those judges who made those rules. You understand? In other words, we didn't make up these words. We used the words of the appeals court and the federal court. And these guys are now our case. We say what we're saying, and there's a footnote. You don't even have to go to the bottom of the page. It's in the middle of the page, the footnote that explains where that came from.
Very decisive.
Yeah, well, guess what? They're so bad, they got a mental block. They won't even read this stuff. I mean, ultimately, if they read it, they would understand that these aren't our words, that these are the words of their bosses.
That's why they're in contempt.
Exactly, because they have to take it. They have to take it verbatim. They can't debate it. They have no choice. They have to obey what that higher court said that they are. When we challenge something and we throw that precedent out there that says that this is what the Constitution says, because the Constitution is their chain, and that's what we're quoting. And that's what they're refusing to acknowledge it.
Tony, I have a question. The way I'm understanding common law, and by the way, I'm kind of new to the subject matter, but the way I understand common law and a court of record is that the only laws that apply in a court of record are the plaintiff's laws. So I am sovereign. So take all their laws, take all their rulings, take all their stare decisis and throw it out the goddamn window. You know, if, you know, what I say is law.
Well, the principle of stare decisis still stands, though.
What?
The principle of stare decisis still stands, but you're correct that they abuse that and they create their own processes of stare decisis. But, you know, just so the people who are listening and understand what we're talking about, common law is a whole different process from civil law. And let me try to just briefly explain this. When you go into common law, let's say you sue an individual. And when you go to sue that individual, you open up a court case in a common law process. And when you're suing that person can call for a jury. And so the jury makes the decision. So it's the sovereign that makes the decision in the court. Now,
a jury of his peers.
That's correct. And if they're a citizen, they'll get the citizen peers. But the thing is that they have the opportunity. If they don't ask for a jury of their peers, then what they'll find out at the end of the game plan is that the person who is the plaintiff is the sovereign of the court, and they get to make the decision at the end. Now, that doesn't really open us up to really go for unrighteous decisions because we're going to pay for that. So people have to be very careful. And once you understand that, you can see that it's not going to get out of line very quickly or very easily. But it brings us back to the people realizing who they are, that they're really the sovereigns, that they have total control. The law is what you say it is for your land, for your being, for your person. Now, when you go to court against the state, okay, and you're suing the state doesn't have the opportunity to ask for a jury because they're not sovereign. There is no jury of the peers. And so when you sue in the state, you have to make sure the judge understands this is a court of record and the decision is going to be made by the tribunal. And the tribunal is the people suing the state. And so you have to put on a good show and lay the program out, show them how the state is guilty, and then come up with a decision and a judgment. And then apply that judgment and with enforcement upon the state. Now, when you really think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. Our particular court case, which, by the way, we have well over 1,000 people in now, which is the gun, we're going after the gun, the Second Amendment violations of by the state, to get all of our gun rights back, or our Second Amendment rights back. When you go into that, we are over 1,000 people. Now, just think of the sense it makes for 1,000 people to decide this case as a true jury, a jury of 1,000 people, than one judge who is paid by the state and is always going under political pressures and under status quo, okay? So you see, it makes all the sense in the world that that judge is not in a position where he should be deciding anything because he will always be deciding that case under stress and he will always go focused in on the status quo and the political pressures that are upon him because he's an elected individual. So that's the logic, and we have to turn it around the way it should be. The people should decide on what's right and what's wrong, not the state, and that's the battle we're fighting. Which, by the way, there are people in here that are muted. If you want to talk, all you have to do is press *6 to unmute your mic or press *8 to raise your hand. What I'll do is I'll unmute everybody, and let's see if we can keep the noise out. But anyway, go ahead. Mic's open.
John, it's Hisham from Staten Island.
Hey, how you doing, Hisham?
How are you? So while we're at it, can you update us on the status of the court case with the Board of Elections, and also just a hint that the website does not have this year's dates for the filing, and so if you can update the website.
Yes. You're talking about the filing of our petitions for committeemen?
Yes.
Yeah, I will look to see. Usually around, what are we in, January, February, March, April, Yeah, I'll start looking to see if the calendars are out yet. I think they do come around, out around April. So if they are, I'll get the dates up there and we'll start preparing for that. And it's always the running for committeeman is always in June, and sometime in July you have to then hand file the, your petitions in, and then the for the election, of course, which is the primary election in September. But anyway, as far as the other court cases, we have two court cases going through from the Board of Election. One that we filed in 2011, we've been to the appellate court. The appellate court, we've discussed this. For anybody interested, you can go back in our earlier episodes. We title them, and you can listen in on the appellate court's decision. We do have the appellate court decision up on our website, on our lawsuit page. And they decided that against us, but what they wrote, they didn't understand our case at all, and we've come to conclude that they probably had their clerks read the case and give them the information, and then they went according to that. The clerks didn't understand anything what we were doing anyway, but we also knew from the questions that they asked, there was only one or two questions that they did ask, that they stuck their foot in their mouth, and it had nothing to do with our case. So we know that they were not up to date on our case. So we refiled for a re-argument. They did, all the paperwork is done, it's been perfected, and they're going to be, we're waiting for a date right now for re-argument. Now, that's on the 2011 case. The 2012 case, we're still in trial court, so to speak. They think we're not in trial court, but the trial court really is in limbo. We filed what's called a writ of mandamus, which is an extraordinary writ, which should have been handled under the emergency status and should have been heard within 10 days. But New York State has taken it upon themselves, since common law doesn't come up in court because lawyers don't know anything about it. They don't practice it. They kind of just tuck that under the rug, and they don't recognize the emergency status of any of the extraordinary writs. You know, the writ of mandamus is one of them. A writ of habeas corpus is another one. It's an extraordinary writ, which is, should be an emergency situation. Now, the federal courts still recognize this, and they have set up the procedures and the process and their rule systems for these extraordinary writs. So we tried to exercise, I just recently tried to exercise those rules here in New York, and these people are so moronic, and I'm, you know, there's no other way to talk, you know, to describe them, but they're so moronic that they say, well, the federal, that's for federal courts, has nothing to do with us. Well, yeah, it's for federal courts, but since you don't have a process, we can use the federal rules in the state court. But they, yeah, they don't want to see that. They don't want to recognize that. They don't want to know that. So it's an uphill battle. We did finally get our case on the second, which is the 2012 case, to be heard for the writ of mandamus, which the attorney general didn't have a clue on what it meant, didn't know how to respond to it, responded to it the opposite of way he should have. But that's just par for the course. I think what we need to do, and I was discussing this with a few other people, is we need to sue the Court of Appeals and the appellate court for the getting the process back of the extraordinary writs and the recognition on the trial courts of the court of record, which is a common law process. This needs to come to a head, and there's only one way we're going to win this whole battle. That is, two things have to be done. There's only one way. We have to get the word out to the people. When we have a court date, we need those courtrooms flooded, because believe me, it frightens these judges. They get frightened. If we can fill the courtrooms on our next appellate hearing, these judges will get frightened about it. Same thing on the trial level. The other thing is, I think it's time to push the press. We haven't pushed on it because, you know, we really don't want a lot of focus yet, but I think we're at that point now. We need the focus. We're out of pressure. So everyone, if they can, they should start notifying the press, send a copy of our case to the press, particularly on the gun issue, because that is the explosive one. That's the one that's really on the top of the game right now. And by pushing that forward, the rest of our case so push and hopefully get some notoriety in the media. Anybody else want to comment on that, or ask another question, or make another comment?
Hey, John.
Hey,
this is Chris.
How you doing, Chris?
Hey, a question again about the committee man process and getting back into that in the next couple of months. I've been part of this group now for about a year and year and a quarter or something, and I remember hearing that the general trend is that alternating years, the Board of Elections comes back and says when we file our committee man petitions that either you're filing to run for a position that doesn't exist and here's the one that you should be filing for or that it seems like you should be filing for, or they say that this is an off year and there is no committee man election this year. You have to wait till next year.
Right.
So in Dutchess County, last year it was the it wasn't an election year for committee men. So would we expect then that this year it's going to be the opposite then, where they say, you say you're filing for committee man, but what you really mean is member of the county committee? I guess that's what I would expect. And just because I'm a little rusty on this now, could you briefly review what the difference is between the committee man and the member of the county committee? Because it seems like splitting hairs, but I think there was a real difference, but I'm kind of rusty on it.
Right. Well, to try to make it as simple as possible so people can really see it quickly, what you have to realize is that, of course, there is a conspiracy here. This is not a theory. It's a conspiracy. And this conspiracy started way back in the turn of the century, going back into the early 1900s. In 1911, they rewrote the election law of the state of New York, and they completely revamped the election law. But they revamped all law. They added all these statutes to control people. But in the process of making all these changes, they restructured it and they add Article 2 of election law. All of Article 2 works with what's called subcommittees and the creations of subcommittees. And that's where the progressive work took place. Now, what they did is they used the language of a subcommittee man as if he's an elected person. They used a lot of the language about the powers of the subcommittee and authority and so on and so forth, when there really isn't any. They were subcommittee, they're not elected. Now, so what they did in election law subsection 2 is they wrote in a title, which is rarely found, as a matter of fact, it's never found anywhere in election law. There are no titles in election law. If you want to run for governor, election law doesn't tell you that the proper title for governor is governor. Well, you run for governor, period. Isn't that what the title is? Because you're running for governor. Well, if you're going to run for a committee man, well, you run for committee man. If you're going to run for dog catcher, you run for dog catcher. You're going to run for New York Senate, you run for New York Senate in your election district. If you're going to run for U.S. Senate, then run for U.S. Senate. It's a no-brainer. It's common. It's obvious. But what they did is they added inside this Article 2 a position called member of the county committee. And hidden in election law subsection 6, I forget what number, 116 or 114, it talks about the member of the county committee being nominated at the election, at the primary election, but then voted in later at another election, which turns out to be a private club election. The point is they're not elected. Now, when we discovered this, we thought it was going to be an uphill battle in the courts. But when we started to look into case law, we discovered that the courts already knew about this. They've been talking about this since 1949, and they've made the point that they had no statutory or constitutional right to office. They were not elected, okay? So we don't have to beat that case. We don't have to win that argument. That argument is clear in election law. There are no elected committee men if you run at what's called a member of the county committee. Now, what's lost and hasn't been around for 60 years, 70 years, maybe more, is the committee man himself, the elected committee man under the title committee man. If you're running for committee man, you put committee man. If you're running for a party position, unelected and approved by the party, but not elected, then you run for member of the county committee. Now, what they've done in order to maintain the power is they phased out, and we teach this in our presentation, and anybody who hasn't had our presentation should invite us to their counties, put together a bunch of people, and we'll come out and we'll give the presentation on the committee man and the judicial process. But anyway, what they've done is they've isolated the power. They've taken half of the counties of New York, 31 of them, and they put them in the even, they left them in the even year election, and they took the other half and they put them into the odd year election. So that when the even year election goes out and the new people come in, they're met by an existing power on the odd level, up on the state level, that does all the appointing. When the odd goes out, they're met by power from the even side, and they do all the appointing. So in that process, it's a really sort of a handshake, and they never lose control of the power structure in the political process. That's why we have all of these problems. That's why we have all of these criminals. We need to take over the process by getting the elected committeemen to make sure they're recognized. Once the elected committeeman is recognized, then we take the total control of both parties, because then they're by law, they have to recognize it. If there's only one elected committeeman in the county, guess what? One elected committeeman takes control of the entire county, okay, if we can get the courts to finally rule on our behalf. And really we're trying to do it also through the common law procedure with a court of record where we decide. So, but we still have to get the courts to work with us to some degree to accept that court system. And we will take that up into the federal courts, and we have some friends in the federal courts. And the federal courts, what you have to understand is they know about the court of record, because all tax courts are the court of records, and that's how the IRS wins all the time, because they claim themselves to be the sovereign, and whatever they say is the law in a court of record. And so they know that. And so we're counting on that to get us through into the federal courts once we move from the state to the federal, because we go from the trial, we go into the appellate court of appeals, and then we move into the feds. And then we have at least two shots in the federal courts. So that's our strategy. We're also strategizing to sue every year. Every year people should run for a committeeman. Whether it's even or odd, it doesn't matter. You should run anyway. Okay, just because the seat's vacant, that's why you should run. Get your name onto the ballot, the paper into the process, and when we win the court case, any paper that is prima facie, correct, will then those will be the elected committeemen if we win through the court system that way. We're also looking to do it by sheer numbers. In most of these counties, or a lot of these counties, they may change the names, you know, from in their computers from committeeman to member of the county committee. But it doesn't change what we really are. We'll get sworn in. We know we're elected. If we could take over by numbers in our county, by taking control, by just going into the committee and literally having enough people to move the committee to take control, then we could take control that way, and then we can start to control the process with our commissioners and the way things work in the office from another position. But anyway, it gets a little complex there, but there is a plan that we could do to take over either way. But we have to execute this by organizing. And in our organization, the key thing right now is to organize, prepare, and become knowledgeable. And then when the time comes that we can move into this position, either by numbers or by court order, either or, then we're prepared and ready to do it, and do it with taking power and running at the same time. So anyway, we should run every year. And this year when we sue, if we don't win before this process takes place, the lawsuit we're going to do is going to be personal lawsuits directly against the commissioners, suing them under U.S. Code for violation of our constitutional rights and our right to run for office. There is a very, very powerful U.S. Code. I believe it's under U.S. Code 42-1985. And what that code says is that anybody, commissioner, anybody that interferes with a person running for an elected position, okay, that they'd be guilty of violating their constitutional rights of that person. And I think the time in jail is maxed out at 2 years on that one. Some of the other ones, it's unlimited. You can put them to jail for life. So, but anyway, and there's also fines and fine limitations there that the federal codes have laid out. Remember, codes are laws for bureaucrats and elected individuals, not for people. So anyway, hopefully I answered your question.
John?
Yes.
I think your mic has an electronic echo. It doesn't seem to be local. I mean, audio. It seems like the whole unit is echoing out of your mic.
Let me try something. I'm going to mute everyone just for a second and see how it goes if everyone's muted, because I hear it too. All right, now everybody is muted. Let me count to five. One, two, three, four, five. Am I clearer now? Now let me unmute, and you tell me whether that was clearer during this time period. Everybody's
yeah,
unmuted.
Yeah, it was clearer.
Now. Okay.
It was clearer.
So, what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to mute everyone. Anybody who wants to talk,
John,
they'll have to raise their hand.
John, I can't unmute myself. I have to raise my hand because on Skype that star thing doesn't work.
Okay.
But I can raise my hand, so you got to watch if somebody's hand's raised. In other words, coming in on the talk show plus coming in through Skype, for some reason the controls don't work that way.
Okay, now what is raising hand? Star 8?
I raise my hand on the text chat. There's a little spot, and when you mute me, it comes up and it says raise hand, and I click it. And
okay, but some people are on the phones and they're not on the text chat, so they need to raise their hand. I'm going out to look.
I'm on talk show, and I've raised my hand a couple of times. You've never called my name, but you know.
Because he's not watching the text chat.
Yeah, I unmute people, but I don't call their name. Some people are listed as – there's a lot of people listed as New York because they haven't registered. So it's star 8 to raise your hand. I'll just call out whoever raised their hand. Even if it's New York, I'll say, New York, you're open. So let me mute everybody right now. And then anybody who wants to talk, just raise your hand. And let me make the mute first. Okay, now I see someone from New York wants to talk. I see three people from New York. So let me unmute those three people. Let me unmute them in order. Number one, New York. I'll unmute all three of them. Go ahead.
Hey,
whoever
John.
Wants to talk, go ahead.
It's Randy Murphy speaking. How are you?
How you doing, Randy?
You talked. I'm up in Buffalo, New York. You talked about moving this to the federal court level, and I want to know. I mean, I'm really into this jurisdiction issue, and under what enumerated power does the federal government have any jurisdiction over state election law? All they do is guarantee us a Republican form of government, and. From what my understanding is, once we have submitted our Constitution to the federal government and we are approved for statehood, that's about the end of their jurisdiction over us, other than the enumerated powers.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Other than the enumerated powers, go ahead.
Yeah, and other than, I mean, I don't see where the federal government gets jurisdiction over this issue. Based on the enumerated powers, and so why are you giving it to them by appealing to them?
Got it. Okay, well, there's a couple of things. They do have jurisdiction under a constitutional situation. For instance, if a state is violating your constitutional, let's not use constitutional rights, your unalienable rights, okay, that is guaranteed you by the Bill of Rights, then it is the federal government, well, not the federal government, but it is the federal courts that have the upper jurisdiction above the state. So in other words,
let me finish
the point, then you can continue.
All right.
You can exercise your right to go into a federal court because the state is abusing you. Now, it's the other way around. If the federal is abusing you, you can go into a state court. For instance, we're testing this now in the IRS. If you get to file first and you file in the state, why not? The state should be protecting you against this foreign corporation that's violating every aspect of your unalienable rights. So it's up to the individual if they want to call in on it. But, yeah, the federal courts rule over the state courts under constitutional issues, and that's just the way it is. Now, but if I'm in state court and I'm realizing I'm not getting a fair shake here, and I use a strategy to move it into a federal court, I could do that, okay, as long as it's a constitutional issue. And that's what gives it the right to issue. It's not the election law. It's the fact that they're violating – it's a constitutional issue. So – but that's up to me whether I want to do that or not. But definitely, if I appeal it to the appellate court in New York and you lose there, then you go to the Court of Appeals and you lose there – why go home? You take it to the federal courts. You've got two more shots there. You're just moving it up the rank.
Yeah, but bottom line, you know, the Bill of Rights does not confer any rights upon me, nor does it guarantee any rights upon me. It recognizes rights. My
mm-hmm.
rights are bestowed upon me by God. The Bill of Rights
right.
does not confer rights upon
but
me.
We understand that. We agree with that.
But men,
okay,
men institute governments in order to protect those rights. That's why we institute governments. So it's so that our rights are protected. And so the states, the federal government and the states do have a sovereignty. It's a clip sovereignty, but that's what it's there for. That's the checks and balance of power. If the state violates your constitutional unalienable rights, the federal government has every right to step in, and the same way that the state has the right to tell the federal government to get the hell out and when they're violating your rights. That's the checks and balances of power, and that's why we have those three those three branches of governments checking each other, and the people being the other branch of government.
I just unmuted another New York and poor Clyde, so if they want to join this conversation, they're unmuted.
Well, yeah, the whole issue with the federal courts is it has to be a federal question, and anything that gets you to a federal question gets you in the Supreme Court, and
right.
and so that's all you have to do is meet that
right.
rule.
So the question to the federal court is this judge needs to obey the sovereign person. And that court is above the court that's disobeying, and they have to obey him. Do not the state courts use that precedent on the federal level? Do they not?
Well, you can, you know, if you've got an IRS agent that comes into your house, you got him for trespassing. You didn't invite him. And
that's, right.
that's a federal issue because it's a federal government employee. I mean, that's all you need.
No, they're not, but.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
They're a private collection agency, but go ahead.
Yeah, there is some legislative authority for them, so they do have a representation. They do represent the government in some way, and all of that is illegal and a fraud, of course. But this is the game they play. Yeah.
You know, I outside of the enumerated powers, I don't see where the federal government really has any jurisdiction whatsoever.
Well, again, you know, the point is that the Bill of Rights is there. And the Bill of Rights, it's the job of the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, to protect the unalienable rights of the people through and by the orders through the Bill of Rights. And so
no, it isn't.
The state, for instance, has written unconstitutional things in our New York State Constitution. And if you challenge them, it's the U.S. Constitution that's going to rule. Now,
that's
if they
right.
ignore that, they say no.
That's right.
Now you're going to have to go to the federal, the U.S. U.S. court to enforce
right.
it.
Well, you
but
know
the
where,
Bill of Rights.
I guess the revelation that I've been kind of coming to, and this is just kind of a stage in my enlightenment, you know, I'm going back to common law, and I'm going back to jurisdiction, and I'm going back to my sovereignty, and I'm going back to courts of record, and I see no need for the Supreme Court in my life.
Well, I agree. Ultimately, you're right. But the problem is that men are not angels, and they are in our government. Matter of fact, the government is full of devils, in my opinion. And so they're going to violate us left and right, and we need to use the courts. And if we have to execute the federal courts to do so, you're absolutely right in what you're saying. But reality is it's an uphill battle.
If I can't trust the state courts to protect my rights, why would I trust the federal courts to protect my rights? And why
would
I trust? Hold on. Let me finish. And why would I trust the Supreme Court to protect my rights? In the final analysis, there's going to have to be some sacrifices here for sure. You know, some people are probably going to go to jail. But what we really need to educate the people to is the fact that we as individuals are sovereign, and we need to go into the courts and express our sovereignty and lose once, lose twice, lose three times, lose 10 times, lose 100 times until we start getting enough momentum for people to defend their own rights as they see fit, because our rights are are diverse and many. You can't even identify what our rights are because our rights are whatever we say they are.
That's what the Ninth Amendment says. We understand that. But don't you understand that these judges on the federal level have articulated that, have said that in cases that made it up out of the states into their courts, and they have said that statutes are not law. They have said everything that you said. They just they said that the sovereign is the court of the sovereign. What's the definition of the court, John?
The court is the sovereign and his
court of record.
The court and suit of the sovereign. That includes all of his witnesses.
Right. Now these are words that the federal Supreme Court has memorialized and that they use as precedent up there that sit there that we're quoting.
Yeah, what we have to do.
Federal court.
But the other thing is the Bill of Rights.
Go ahead.
What we have to do, though, is we have to use whatever tools we have available to us. Most of the friendly case law, most of it does come from the U.S. Supreme Court over the past 100 years and more. But we've got a lot of it from the U.S. Supreme Court. We do have some friendly stuff from New York Supreme Court, too, quite a bit of it there, too. But the majority is coming from the U.S. Supreme Court. So we need to make use of that. Now, as far as codes go, the only codes that are out there to protect us, these judges say they're unsuable. Matter of fact, the governor's office just informed me that we can't sue them. And the legislators and the senators informed me that we can't sue them, that they're unsuable. They don't have to account for what they do. And that may be true as long as they're under the authority that they've been given. But once they step outside of that authority, they're no longer protected by anything. Now, they seem to think that they can go break the law and they're still protected. That's a lie from hell, and we're going to show them that that's a lie from hell. Now, we're not going to win that in a state court because there are no statutes and there are no real good precedences in state court, at least not in New York that I'm aware of, that's going to give us any kind of a leverage against these bastards. But we go into the U.S. Supreme Court. We go into U.S. Code 42 and 18. These things were written to get rid of these criminals and to put these criminals in jail. So when we start to exercise those codes, which is our right and duty to do, and the Supreme Court says that they will not be defeated by local precedences by local precedences, they will not be defeated by that. They're as good in a state court as they are in a federal court. So we're using those codes here in New York State, and we have the governor's office tell us, well, that doesn't have anything to do with us, you know, and they're above the federal has nothing to do with us. We have our own codes. They're not saying that out like that, but that is what they're saying. So what we're going to do now maybe is we're going to have to exercise some of that federal leverage if we have to. But first, you are absolutely right. This has got to be a case being fought relentlessly over and over and over. You lose, we're going to come in with another one, with another one, with another one. That's how we're going to win. Overwhelm them with the people in the courtroom pissed off, being polite and nice and not being disorderly, but letting them know we're not happy campers here. Who are you people that you think one person can sit and rule over all of us? We're the people. The law is what we say it is, not what you say it is. We are the ones that ordain and establish the Constitution. We are the ones that ordain and establish our laws.
Bingo, Jeff. Bingo. You've got 137 people in this group or 167 people in this group. If all we did was each of us file a common law jurisdiction lawsuit in state court, those 167 cases would overwhelm them. It would get
all the public. Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're doing here in New York. We're trying to establish a study group in every county. We're trying to affect every county court, every Supreme Court in every county, and every town court throughout. There's 960 towns and villages, and there's 63 cities in the state of New York. We want to affect every single one of them. And the only way we're going to do it is by making the battle in the counties, and we train the people. You know, if people just go in and challenge the traffic tickets, the traffic violations, the minimum things, okay, so that, you know, worst case to worst, you could end up with a fine, you know, go to jail. So challenge, let's start off challenging those. You challenge that in the town court, and they ignore you. They don't go. So you make the report. They ignore you, too. So then you make the lawsuit. You move it to what's called a writ of mandamus into the county court, and they still don't understand it. So you move it into the state, into the Supreme Court through the county on the state level, and they may or may not understand it, but then you get into the appellate court. Now, once the appellate court rules the right way, or the court of appeals, or the federal courts, if you have to go there, but you go right up the line. But once you get the approval somewhere, now it sinks right back down. It hits the Supreme Court. It hits the county court. It hits the town court. And now they all know. And next time you walk into that courtroom and you challenge their jurisdiction, case dismissed. You get someone, hey, I'm going to do what he did. You just go challenge it. Challenge your jurisdiction. Case dismissed. Case dismissed. You see, then it moves to the next town over. Then your precedents, you say, you better call this other judge over there because we've already been through this, and here's the case law because this is what happened here. And you see, you move it through your entire county, and that's how we're going to win this thing.
Okay? I got it.
Now, same time, we're hammering these people on Supreme Court lawsuits. We're suing the Board of Election. We've got two cases in there. We're suing the governor, the assembly, and the Senate for our right to carry arms. They don't have the right to deny us our Second Amendment. We're suing the state again to protect our sheriff because they're trying to shut down our sheriff. We want to sue the appellate court because they don't understand the process of the writ of mandamus and the habeas corpus, the extraordinary writs. They've constantly canceled them out, and they have shut the people off. We also want to sue them because the trial courts don't even recognize that there is such a thing as common law. We also want to sue these bastards because, again, they tell us that you have to have a license to practice law. That's a lie from hell for anyone who doesn't. There is no such thing as a licensed attorney. It doesn't exist. They have registered attorneys by the Supreme Court only for the sole purpose of representing infants and morons. So anyone who gets an attorney is a moron or an idiot. They just don't know it yet. But they're going to lose. Because the attorney owes his allegiance first and foremost to the court, then to the people, and lastly to the person who's paying the bill to go into that courtroom. Okay? And people don't know that. And they always make the deal in the back room. They spend a year or two or three in court. They write all these papers back and forth, and they end up settling in the end anyway because the whole game plan is to really get as much money as they can from you. The whole system is rigged. That's how they reward these New World Order attorneys, lawyers. Okay, that's what they are, the New World Order attorneys. So they reward them by allowing them to make all this money and just stretch these cases out for half or forever. And then you end up losing anyway, or you have to make a deal and give up most of what you got. Meanwhile, you're broke by the time you get to the end. You get just as much justice as you can afford. And really, you get just about as much injustice as you can afford. Anyway, mic's open. Anybody want to bring up anything else?
The other thing I'm twitching at here is in the federal court, you don't get anywhere with a Bill of Rights. That's not a Bill of Rights. It's on our side. It's a Bill of Prohibitions. And so that's what needs to be talked about in the courtroom is
the
prohibition.
Bill of Prohibition, yes.
When
you talk about the Bill of Rights, you're talking ultimately about what is upon the government to obey. The fact is that you have unalienable rights, and that's the position we have to always be making. Our rights are unalienable.
Right.
What we define there is just to try to put you into a box, but we have a lot more to say about that.
Yes. As a matter of fact, where do our rights come from? They come from in secular terms, they come from the Declaration of Independence.
Well, yeah, it comes from God. No, ultimately, it comes from the Creator. And the Declaration of Independence makes that clear, that it comes from our Creator.
Yep, yep.
They're unalienable rights.
Yeah, John, I just came across...
John, can I jump in here?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Listen, the Bill of Rights applies to every American citizen, and it was confirmed by the Supreme Court under the Heller decision, okay? And the Bill of Rights, it protects the freedom of speech, the religion, the right to jury trial, etc., and it applies to every individual American citizen, and the Heller decision protects us all over that. So that's one of my points.
Yes.
Was Heller after the 14th Amendment?
Anything after the 10th Amendment, in my opinion, is suspect. I mean, there are a few good things, but most of it is BS.
Was Heller after the 14th Amendment?
Oh, I don't know. What was the question?
I think Heller was after the 14th Amendment, and the 14th Amendment, he created a new class of citizen, a second
Correct.
Class citizen, okay? And and if you're not subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which we are not because we're sovereign, then U.S. citizenship is foolish, and the Bill of Rights really doesn't apply to us, okay?
Well, you're right. You're right if you're a U.S. citizen. The problem with being a U.S. citizen is it's an oxymoron. It doesn't exist. The United
right.
States is not a country. It's a nation. Nation does not have
citizenship. It's a corporation.
And,
it's not
right.
a nation.
Well,
it's not
again,
a country. It's a corporation.
I agree with you, but nevertheless, it was originated as a trust, which is equal to a corporation, and it was to be controlled by the 50 states, but they gave a certain amount of authority. Of course, back then it was 13, but they gave a certain amount of authority in order for it to function as a sovereign nation among nations. That was the process of creating the United States. So, but the United States, again, is a nation. And it is never meant to take control of the states, which is what they've done. And the 14th Amendment, what the 14th Amendment did, ultimately it removed the ownership of the slaves in the South from the slave owners to the federal government. And
right.
then over a process of time, they made us ignorant in our own schools, and eventually everybody came under the 14th Amendment, at least they think, because they're taught that they are citizens. So everybody identifies themselves as a U.S. citizen until they understand the fraud there. And once they understand the fraud, then they deny they're U.S. citizen, but then they call you a nut. So I don't really bring that up often, but as Thornton teaches, you know, you go into court, I'm one of the people. And that's the plan, that's the place where you make your battle from, as one of the people, which is above the Constitution. My
yeah,
rights
never,
are not available.
Never identify yourself as a U.S. citizen in a court of law, because then
right.
you make yourself subject to their jurisdiction. Okay?
Right. I wouldn't even identify myself as a New York citizen in a court of law. I identify
yeah.
myself as one of the people, because
that's,
even that could be dangerous because of the corporate game they play in New York.
You
know,
if
when
you,
I write, then
if you,
when
if
I,
you go ahead.
When I write papers, okay, and you look at their papers, they say state of New York, county of whatever. I turn that around and I put New York State, if I'm suing in Albany County, I put New York State, comma, Albany County, where they put state of New York, comma, county of Albany. You see, that turnaround of words really gives the signaling of the corporate side to the trust side. Okay,
careful,
be on the trust side.
No, careful, because New York State is a public benefit corporation.
Absolutely, it's a trust.
I
yes.
know, but you reversed them in your discussion right there. When you identify yourself as a sovereign citizen, you are a natural-born person, you're a natural-born individual in the small-s state of capital N, New York, capital Y, okay? There is
right,
no,
Constitution. Are you familiar with Thornton?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you know that he teaches the fact that, you know, which is a very good point. He talks about really Lincoln saying this, that if you don't want to argue a point, don't bring it up. And it's simple enough to make the point that, A, you're the plaintiff, B, you're one of the people, and C, this is a court of record. And once you establish those three major things, you then have to be careful with your language throughout, of course. You don't want to use the word that you have a residence anywhere. You use the word that you're domiciled. It's a legal word. You can put the meaning of the word underneath so they understand. They understand that, but they think it's strange. You see, because most of the people in the trial courts, they're really thinking you're crazy when you bring up certain points, because they don't really know the truth. They don't even know what real law is. They don't really understand the game. They've just been brainwashed and they're useful idiots. That's all they are, because they're true believers in what they're doing. They've been told the lie, and so they're running off the lie. That is what energizes them. They don't know the conspiracy part of it. They don't even know that a conspiracy exists. They're just useful idiots. But
you know,
once in a while, you do reach someone that does know.
I just want to leave you. I want to leave you with a little thought that I that kind of dawned on me this week, which was the expression, "The truth is stranger than fiction."
Right, I know.
And think about that for a while.
Living in fiction.
Yeah, because really, what we do is we live in this fictitious world, and we can't handle the truth. Okay, about what's going on here. And most people can't. They just bury their head in the sand.
Where did that statement come from? Any idea truth is stranger than fiction? Because that is so true in what we've understand now today. Any idea where that came from?
You know, it just dawned on me just in my own musings, okay?
Yes.
So I didn't research where it came from, but I thought to myself, it has a new meaning to me now.
I think that was the original meaning.
But see, they all are involved in a mystery or fiction.
Yeah.
So that's why they think it's fine. It's fiction.
We're living in the fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were all educated in the public school, so that's why they have the way they have. They have the and concepts the way they are.
Let me just digress for a moment, and we can come right back to this conversation again. But I just want to digress for a minute and sort of make an announcement out there. We need to organize our state. So we have to organize every one of our counties. We need volunteers who will step up and take control of the process of helping to organize the county. So anybody who's interested in doing that, to become a contact person for the county and to try to work and try to bring together the liberty groups within your county and get your surrounding counties to do the same so that we can, you know, become organized. We're not going to win unless we become organized. So send me an email. You know, just hit contact on newyorkcommittymen.org. You get all my information. My email is john@newyorkcommittymen.org anyway. Send me an email and give me the county, your name, your email, and your phone. And I will post you up on our page, which is called County Contacts. And,
okay.
Then it's going to be your job. And if we have two or three people doing this or as many as necessary, we'll post more than one person per county. It doesn't matter to us. We need to get a small core of people that's really starting to work on trying to organize the county in order to work with all the other counties and be able to take back our republic by fighting in the courts, learning how to do it, working out the judicial process and the political process.
I'm in.
And training. I'm sorry?
I'm in.
What county are you in?
Erie.
Okay, well, go out, send me an email, give me your name, and if you go out to, you've been on our website, right? NewYorkCommittyman.org? Yes. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I love it.
Okay. Down on the bottom, next, right above a mission statement, you'll see county contacts. Okay. If you click on site contact, you send me an email and give me your name, your county, your email, and your phone number. Okay. And then we will post that, and anybody that wants contact, you'll be sent to you. And you kind of just organize your county. You work with other people. You need a core group of at least four to 12 people is really what's desirable. Now, on the top of our page is also join our meetup group. So people should join our meetup group, and that's where you can meet other people in your county. If you go out to our meetup group, for instance, and you click on members, and when the members show up, you'll see a little box on the right side that says find a member. If you put in your county, if you're Erie, just put in Erie, and anybody that's in Erie County that's in our group, they'll show up on the list, and you can make contact direct with those people there too, and that may help you to organize your county. But if we don't organize, we're going to lose. They are a very well-organized, oiled machine, and we're going up against a very powerful machine, but the people are more powerful if only we can organize.
And what I'm going to do in addition to signing up is also I'm pledging $100 tonight, okay?
I appreciate that. We definitely need money, that's for sure. And by the way, we have, you know Dave out there or Paul?
What's that?
Do you know a guy named Dave or Paul?
From Erie County?
We, Yeah, from Erie County and Niagara County. We have people out there that are very strong in the common law. This one guy, Dave Mongello, matter of fact, he's one of the lead guys on the gun battle that we're fighting in Albany. He's the lead person on that court case. He's out there in Niagara County. He's fighting the town out there. He's got all kinds of things. He's suing judges, prosecutors, everything out there. So this is definitely a guy you want to connect with. And they've got a lot of committeemen out that way in Niagara and Erie County.
Yeah, well, I formed the Save the Village of Orchard Park Committee, and we fought against the downsizing of our village legislature with the GRECE law that Cuomo passed to try to abolish village governments. Mm-hmm. And we fought very successfully, and we have a fairly large organization of about 170 people here. So I expect to exercise whatever influence in that group.
How long you been in the common law?
2 weeks.
You're pretty damn good for 2 weeks. Well, look, you got to connect with this guy.
It.
You got to connect with this guy, Dave Mongello. When you send me your info and I put you up online, I'll send you his phone number. And I'll drop a note to him also. You guys need to work together because you're county to county. You're Erie, he's Niagara, and he's in Lockport. You know where Lockport is at?
I certainly do.
Okay, he's suing the town of Lockport. He's suing the judge down there. He's suing the prosecutor. We're going after politicians, all kinds of people down there. He's got a lot of stuff going on. And you definitely got to tie in with him.
Well, I believe, you know, I've been searching for 15 years, and I believe the common law is the holy grail.
I agree 100%. It is the game. It's going to take us an uphill battle, I tell people, but we have to have endurance. You know, don't expect to fight a war and not get resistance. We're fighting a war. These people do not want to let go. But we will, look, here's the key thing, and we make this point, you know, We have to establish ourselves on three powers, and the highest power is spiritual power. Now, that's a personal power that you have to work out yourself with God in your prayer closet, but you definitely got to do that. And that other two powers is the power of destiny, which ultimately the destiny, our political destiny, which is political power, and our the destiny and control over our justice system, which is judicial power. So those are the three powers we pursue. The spiritual power, we have I hold the position, most everyone I know that's in this has the same kind of position. We're trusting in God, and this is the ultimate thing. God's going to put the right judge in the right place at the right time. We're counting on that, because at some point we're going to get judges that's going to say, yeah, and they're going to recognize the court of record, they're going to permit it, and we're not going to be battling with them, or they'll be turned to accept it, or they'll make some rulings right off the bat, and it'll be the right rulings and the right decisions, and we will start to get some footholds in certain places. And when that starts happening, then it's going to be a watershed.
Absolutely.
So that's where we're at.
I grew up on a farm, and I went to engineering school, became an engineer. Now I'm retired, and I'm still educating. And this whole common law thing and the jurisdictional issues and with the income tax are all just educational experiences. And so you get more education, you're more handy at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
When you go out to the Western County, when are you going to go? I mean, you're going on
I'm
the 20th.
I'm going out on the 20th. If you want us to meet you along the road,
What I was thinking is we should schedule when we can meet at some time. I can drive the rest of the way out and back from there.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We're going to be going out Route 17, it's the 20th. We have to be out there at 11. I'll have to figure out the time we're going to leave out here and where we might be able to meet you and what time, and we'll be getting there and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we'll just meet at one of
the
exits.
Yeah, we'll try to organize it somehow.
Okay, all right.
What kind of vehicle do you have?
It's a 2003 Audi.
How many people can you fit in there?
Five.
Five? Okay. I think at this point, two, maybe three of us going from here.
Okay.
So I think there's two, Gerard and myself. I don't know if Phil's going to go out with us or anyone else, but We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, that'll give us plenty of room.
Yeah. And again, everybody that wants to file up to become a contact on our website here in order to organize your county, you know, organize, get a hold of all of the liberty groups in the county or surrounding counties and organize a presentation for us. And we come out with free presentations. We'll put a donation can up there, try to get donations to cover our costs for traveling. But other than that, it's free. And we do give the presentation on the political and judicial process. We put them together. Hopefully it's going to be about an hour and 15-minute presentation, and then the rest of the time will be towards conversation, open forum type thing.
John, I'd love to have you. I'd love to have you up here to Erie County. I've got quite a core of people, and I think we could
We're heading out to Chautauqua. I think Johnstown?
Johnstown.
How far are you from Johnstown?
My office is in Ripley in Chautauqua County, which I'm not familiar with Johnstown. Are you talking Mayville, or are you talking? I don't know Johnstown.
Oh, well, if you go out, I'll tell you exactly where it's at because we have posted it up on our website on the calendar. So if you click on the calendar, here's the address we're going to on the 20th.
He's trying to get to Chautauqua County.
174 Chautauqua Avenue, Lakewood, New York.
Lakewood. I know where Lakewood is for sure.
So what you should do... When you send me the info to become a county organizer, make the note on there to give you the name. Jim, he's got his email address up here. I'll send you his phone number, okay? And and then you can call him. He's organizing, he's organizing quite a few groups out there. And if your group can get in there, because you're a trip. If we can do as many as we can. When we go out there on Saturday, it'll be very helpful that we don't have to make a second trip. But we will come out a second time if we have to, you know?
Yeah, my constituency is in Erie County. That's about an hour and a half away from Lakewood. So.
Right. We'll see who you can get to come out on that Saturday, and then we'll come back out again if we have to. Maybe we can tie in people from Niagara to come down to Erie. Because last time we did a presentation for Niagara, we did it in Erie. So...
All right. Well, you know what? I think I could organize a pretty nice group for Erie, and I think for Chautauqua I could probably get a half a dozen people.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, we're coming out the 20th. Anybody who wants to come to that, and we'll come back out again. If you want to organize another one, we'll come out again.
You got it.
But we have to get moving on organizing and get a core group throughout the state. You know, we're also looking... Once we get the core group started, we're going to then start working on a jury pool throughout the state, and then we'd like to work that into the grand jury for each county. And, you know, all of that will work beautifully together with the committee man once we get into the committee man process, because then we got the numbers of people, and we're going to turn. You see, most committee men will be able to turn to our side. We can educate them and give them real power because they have never had real power, and most of them are disgusted. They lose a lot through attrition as time goes on. They're always looking for new suckers to bring in as committee men, and they'll keep them 2, 4, 6 years unless they find a criminal element that they can, you know, that if they're a criminal themselves, then they get involved in something. Other than that, they lose majority of people constantly. It's a big turnover.
All right, John, I've got to sign off, but this has been very enlightening, and it's a pleasure to join the group.
All right, same. God bless you. We'll talk to you soon. Send me that email when you can.
I will.
All right, mic's open. Anybody else? We're going to continue for a little while longer.
John, this is Hisham. I have to go also, but I just sent you an email.
Okay, Hisham.
All right, good night, everybody. Take care.
Good night. Yeah,
good night.
Are you organizing something down your way soon, Hisham?
Yes, I actually put a couple of dates for you to let me know if you're booked on them.
Okay. All right, we'll talk about that probably tomorrow. Let's get on the phone. You got my number. Just give me a call.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks.
All right, thanks.
John?
Thanks. Yes?
I'd be glad to help you with Saratoga, Warren County, Essex County, probably a lot of these between here and Watertown.
Set me up, and I'll come up, and as you know, and we'll give the presentation, and we'll start trying to get county leaders to build core groups in those counties.
I've got pretty close to 700 of those people on my list right now.
Well, I'm ready to come up to talk.
He ran out of fingers and toes.
For us to have, that's all. You know, one of the things I don't have is if the room's big, I need, you know, I don't have a mic system, but. You know, other than that, you know, I've got the projector and I've got the screen and all that other stuff. But sometimes I go, you know, if you set up in like a library or certain halls, like this one group setting it up in a, well, I think it's a veterans hall or something. But they have everything. They even have the projector and everything there.
We can set it up in the library. We have a library that holds 200 people.
There you go, and they probably have the mics and the projector and everything, right?
If they don't, we would.
Yeah, I always bring mine with me, just in case theirs breaks. I have mine.
I could check on it, but we hold the Justice and Development Foundation meetings on Saturday at the library, and we could probably change it even if we needed to. We usually hold them at Saturday at 3:00.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have a Justice and Development Foundation that I sponsored with ACC.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty good meeting, and we might even get 100, 200 people there even.
That'd be great.
Great.
Set us up. Find some, you know, give me a call when you think you have a date, and we'll make sure it doesn't conflict with anything else we're doing. You think Saturdays are the best days for you?
Saturdays are a good date for me, and I'll tell you, I think that Saturday was the best date when we did. I've been working with Palladino and the boys on this gun control issue all over the state. We've got about 52 counties on board, and the best day we had, I think, down there was on a Saturday at the Albany. You can't get people out that work, and the economy's so tight up here, you're just not going to get those people out on weekdays.
Right. Yeah, well, Saturday works better for me because, first of all, I got to travel, and second of all, yeah, I don't have to rush home. You know, people can stay a little later because it's during the day or something, and, you know, we have more time. So,
I've coordinated up here for We the People for about 20 years and all across the United States. And The economy is in the tanks.
The what?
The economy's in the tanks. You got to get these people out on the weekends.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you kind of want to be sort of a regional organizer for that area of the state and maybe even an organizer for your county, I don't know how much you want to involve yourself, but, you know, if you can be a regional organizer and to find us organizers in those counties, where we lack most of our most of what we lack is your area. We don't have that many contacts in the northern part of the state. Most of our contactors are Albany and south of Albany, Rensselaer and coming right across to Oswego, and then we have some of the central area and we have a good deal of the western area all covered, but the northern part of the state, we have nothing going on up there, so we do need someone who can organize that area.
I have somebody in every county up here, St. Lawrence all the way into Plattsburgh, St. Lawrence County, clear to the Canadian border and out to Watertown.
Try to find us the leaders.
Are you the guy that is in touch with Bob Schultz?
Bob Schultz is my neighbor.
Okay. Then, Johnny, that's the guy you want to talk to.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Him and I have been talking all week. So
okay.
He's very involved in this movement, and I knew he'd be a good organizer for us. But anyway, you know, even if I come up to Warren County or whatever county I come up to, and then if I have to come over to Jefferson or Lewis for another group of people, which I guess is more towards the other side of the mountains. However it is, you know, I'll travel wherever I got to go.
Well, I can get you a meeting set up anytime you want to do it on a Saturday at the Glens Falls Library with that Justice and Development Foundation. You just have to give me a Saturday you want to do it. We could start there. We could work our way to Plattsburgh or wherever you want to work your way to. I mean, basically, I have people in Keysville, St. Lawrence County, all up into Peru and all those places up there.
Okay.
John is half gun, will travel.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm booked on the 20th. Okay. I'll tell you what Saturdays I'm open. I'm open Saturday the 27th. I'm open, which is, let's see, April. So I'm open the 27th. I'm open May 4th. May 4th or 11th I'm going to be closed. One of those I'm going to work down into Staten Island. Tomorrow I'll know which one of them I'm going to be booking. Huh?
If you want to try the 27th, I'll try to set it up, but make sure you
confirm
it.
That'd be great. 27th is good. I'd love
that. Yeah, we'll do it at the Glens Falls Library with the Justice and Development Foundation.
Okay, I've been to the Glens Falls. Gerard, haven't we been to Glens Falls? Was that the library we were at?
Yeah.
Or was that the county building?
I've had the governor there before.
That'll be pretty close for you.
Remember we couldn't get in? Remember we couldn't get into the one? Was that the one we couldn't get into?
I don't remember.
We ended up going into Spiders.
Oh, no, that was in Albany.
This
is one up at Glens Falls where Bob Schultz lives. Remember we went up to meet Bob Schultz and we went to his, he had some kind of thing going on up there.
Training
program, and we went up there to see how it went. And I don't know whether that was in the library or the town building. But in any event, get me the information. You set it up for the 27th. We're good for that, Skip. And just get me the details on the address and the times, and we'll post it right away, and we'll be up.
And I'll follow up with your guy from Buffalo there. I'll get you $100 to help you get your thing going, too.
Appreciate it. Yep, we need money, let me tell you.
Yeah, you have to do that. You can't, like I was telling you before there about the three C's and how to organize, you have to have unity and you have to have money, because we usually do a pass the hat thing at our meetings. We have, like, in Chestertown, we'll have 60 to 100 people there. And we, you know, you got to take in some kind of money or you can't keep these things going.
Yeah, it doesn't run by itself.
No.
I mean, what we did with the Justice and Development thing was a little bit different. We signed people up for $10, and we developed enough money to print a newspaper.
Oh, good.
So we printed a little newspaper at the college, and we're trying to get that funded at the college now. But, you know, you have to start somewhere, and you can't start nothing without seed. So if you don't have any seed, it's kind of hard to sow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I just want to make the note. I think we did pretty well tonight to organize two major areas. Let me shut the recording off. We're going to continue talking. I just don't like to let it run any much longer than an hour and a half because people won't listen to it. So hang on a second. End.